be with you and to share a little bit of what we, my wife and I, have been doing for the Lord down in the country of Ecuador. Ecuador in Spanish means equator, and that's exactly where we have been, on the equator. But believe it or not, it's hotter here than where we've been, and we have both been feeling the heat since we've come up into the States in these months, and they tell me it gets hotter, not cooler, for a while yet. So I guess we'll have to acclimatize again to this phenomena of hot weather. You might say, why isn't it hot down where we have been? Well, we are at an elevation of 3,500 feet. That does help. And the other thing that does help where we've been is the fact that we have two seasons down there, we say. We have the season of wet and the season of wetter. Bear in mind, when I say we have nearly 300 inches of rain per year, we have a lot of rain and very little bright sunshine as such, and therefore that tends to keep the climate a little cooler and a little more pleasant than what it would be if there had been no rain. We are on the Amazon jungle side of the Andes, in the foothills of the Andes, almost in the jungles, and I'll talk a little bit more about that later as we tell you something of the assembly work and of what we ourselves have been doing there for the last three and a half years or thereabouts. First, I would like to read the scriptures and to bring a few comments from them before we start talking about ourselves, and hopefully and prayerfully that you will enjoy and have a little more knowledge of what God is doing in that part of his vineyard. Right, we'll turn to Matthew's Gospel, and we're going to read the first verses in the 20th chapter. The Lord Jesus Christ is speaking here to his friends and to his apostles and to those who were with him at that time. And he's speaking in parables. I'm using the New King James Version. It is a wee bit different in places to the Authorized Version. For the kingdom of heaven is like a landowner who went out early in the morning to hire labourers for his vineyard. Now when he had agreed with the labourers for a denarius, or a penny a day, he sent them into his vineyard. And he went out about the third hour and saw others standing idle in the marketplace, and said to them, "Ye also go into the vineyard, and whatsoever is right, I will give it you." And they went. Again he went out about the sixth and the ninth hour, and did likewise. And about the 11th hour, when he went out and found others standing idle, and said to them, "Why have you been standing here idle all the day?" They said to him, "Because no one hired us." He said to them, "You also go into the vineyard, and whatever is right you will receive." So when evening had come, the owner of the vineyard said to the steward, "Call the labourers and give them their wages, beginning with the last to the first." And when those who came, who were hired about the 11th hour, they each received a penny. But when the first came, they supposed that they would receive more, and they likewise received each a penny. And when they had received it, they murmured against the landowner, saying, "These last men have worked only 1 hour, and you have made them equal to us who have borne the burden and the heat of the day." But he answered one of them and said, "Friend, I am not doing you wrong. Did you not agree with me for a penny? Take what is yours and go your way. I wish to give this last man the same as to you. Is it not lawful for me to do what I wish with my own things? Or is your eye evil because I am good?" So the last will be first, and the first last. For many are called, but few are chosen. There, I would think, are many interpretations we could put upon this parable, a story with a hidden or concealed meaning. But today I want to look at this from the viewpoint of laboring for the Lord in one's lifetime. The last verse that we read, in the last line, many are called, but few are chosen. It's very interesting when you stop and think about that little text. Many are called. The Lord calls every person who is a Christian to come, serve, and to follow him. But many of us are like the folks that we read so often in the scriptures. They hear the call, but they procrastinate. They don't obey. Remember the parable about the two sons? Go work in my vineyard, says the father to the elder. And he didn't go. He said, no, I won't. He said to the younger son, you go and work in my vineyard. Oh yes, Dad, I'll go. And he didn't go. And later we read that the older son repented and he did go and work. But the younger son, he said, I'll go. How often, I wonder, have we said to the Lord, Lord, I'll go. And we haven't done what he has asked us to do. We notice that this man went out early in the morning at daybreak. He went down to where the labourers were standing or gathering, waiting to be hired for the day. And he found some there and he said, look, you men, go down and work in my vineyard and I'll give you a penny for your labour. And so they went. They agreed to go and they went. Daybreak. Perhaps we could liken that to the youth. The Lord, the young people, the very young people, they're full of zeal, they'll go, and they went. He goes back out again about 9 o'clock in the morning, about the third hour, 9 o'clock. He still finds people standing idle in the market, and so he hires some more to go out and work. He did the same thing again at midday. He found more, and again at 3 o'clock in the afternoon he found some more. At 5 o'clock he goes down and there's still people standing there. What are you standing here all the day for, he says. Because, he said, the men replied, no one has hired us. And so he hired them at 5 o'clock for 1 hour's work and sent them to work. The young people at daybreak. 9 o'clock, the young people, those coming into their teens. God uses all ages for his work. Each of us can do something for him. We don't have to wait till we're old. We don't have to wait till a more convenient time. God comes to us, and he may come when we're young. He may come when we're teenagers. He may come when we're young men and young women. He may come to us in middle age for a specific job that he wants us to go and do. He may even come when we're old and still have a specific job that he would like us to do. You know, there's something interesting about the Lord Jesus and about God our Father. In this world we work in and we live in, when we get to be a certain age, they say we're too old to work, it's time to retire. Time to sit back and enjoy the fruits of your labour. I don't read in the scriptures where God says, okay, I've finished with you now, it's time for you to put your feet up, time to sit back and relax and enjoy yourself. I don't read that anywhere in the scriptures. God's servants. He never retires. There's always something for all of us to do, no matter how young or how old we are. God never retires us and says, you've done enough. There's always more. There's always something that he's got in store that we can do for him, no matter how old or how young. But at the end of their days, he takes us home. He takes us, he calls us to his eternal rest. This world is not our rest or home, we sometimes sing. I don't know whether you sing that hymn here, I just can't remember the full lines of it. But it goes on to point out the fact that until then, we'll carry on. Until the day breaks and our work here on earth is done, then God calls us and tells us, well done. It's interesting, you know, in our walk upon this earthly scene, sometimes God takes young people and uses them, and they are used for him right through their earthly lives. Sometimes he takes men and they start well, and then he sits them aside for a period of time and then brings them back in later on for some other ministry. God knows and has a perfect plan for everyone's life. Take the example of Moses, for instance. Moses, you know, from a baby was taken into Pharaoh's court. He was treated as the daughter of Pharaoh's, and he was trained in all the court procedures of Pharaoh's kingdom in Egypt. And we understand for about 40 years, or thereabouts, he was in the king's court, learning to be someone. He was being trained to rule. And then at the end of 40 years, Moses went out, as we know, and he had a look to see what was happening to his fellow countrymen. And as a result of what he saw and did, he had to flee into the desert. And for another 40 odd years, Moses was there in the backsides of the desert, learning again to be nobody, learning to be a nobody, training to be humble. Here's this man who was going to be the Pharaoh of Egypt, out in the desert, tending flocks of sheep and camels and goats, learning to be a nobody in that situation, humbling the situation. And then at the end of those 40 years, God came to him. And he said to him, Moses, go back to Egypt. I have work for you to do. And because of Moses' ability and court procedures, he knew all about the protocol of that place where God was sending him back to. He knew exactly how to react in that court when he went back to face the new Pharaoh that he had to go and see. He wasn't like you and I, perhaps, going into the president's of the United States home, just wondering what we were to do and what we were expected to do. Moses knew exactly how to behave himself as he went back there. He could call upon his past experience. And God took him back to Pharaoh's court, and then he took him along with the children of Israel, that great nation of nearly 2 million souls altogether. He took him out of Egypt and took them towards the promised land. 40 years learning to be a man of God in that desert experience, leading those people as rebellious people through that 40 years of time, training again to trust God in every detail of his life. You stop and think of the story of Moses' life and how he was learning right to the very end about God and about God's grace and God's goodness. He never stopped learning all those 120 years that he lived. And at the end of the 120 years, we read in Deuteronomy, in the last chapter, in chapter 34, that at the end of his 120 years, his eye was not dim, his hearing was not, had not decreased. He was as fit and as able then as what he was when he was a younger man. And God took him home to be with himself. And God buried him, buried his body in the mountains of Moab, and no one knows where he was buried to this day. Now, that's an exhortation for each one of us. Never give up. Go on. Keep on keeping on. God has work for us to do until he says, enough, come home. Never give up. Never say, I can't do anything for the Lord Jesus. There's something that we can do. There's something we can learn. There's something we can always pass on. My wife and I are from New Zealand. We have lived all our lifetime in New Zealand until just over 5 years ago. We have five adult children and 13 grandchildren at this present time. We lived in the North Island of New Zealand. I was a farmer in my early late days. My parents were sheep and cattle farming. And when my wife and I were married, we bought our own farm and we raised cattle and sheep combined. I think I understand in the States here a little bit that you tend to keep your sheep and your cattle a wee bit apart. We ran them in combination. It wasn't dairy cattle, we were running breeding cattle for beef and meat. And we raised our five children on that farm, and they grew up in due course, and when they were teenagers they went off to further their education in the city at colleges. There was no colleges available where we lived. It meant that they had to leave home and go away to boarding establishments and learn to stand on their two feet, as it were. In 1972, the Lord told us very clearly that he wanted us to leave the farm and to go into the city and to take up a secular job in the city. And as a result of going into the city, we were able to bring home our children from the schools that they were boarding at and have them at home with us during the latter part of their teenage years. By this time they had come to appreciate home, something that oftentimes we have problems with when children live all their life with their parents. And so we had a very enjoyable time with them as teenagers. They grew up in due course and married and went their several ways. Now when the Lord told us to go to the city, he told us that he had a work for us to do. But he didn't tell us what to do. Just told us to go to the city. And he gave us a verse that stayed with us, and every time we wondered what we were doing in the city, that verse came back to us. Habakkuk chapter 2, a vision that we were to wait for. Doesn't tell us what the vision was, but we were to wait for it. And every time we wondered, what are we doing here, that verse somehow or other always came back to us, wait. And so we waited, and we waited, and we waited. In 1985, by this time our second son and his wife had shifted to Ecuador as missionaries and he was a teacher, school teacher, and he was down in the little village of Shell, and he was teaching at the missionary school down there for missionary children. teaching, I think at the time around about 20, between 20 and 30 missionary children at the Nate Saint Memorial School. Now, Nate Saint, some of you will remember that man. He was one of the five missionary martyrs that were martyred by the Orca Indians. And Nate lived in a shell, and his home and the old hangar and everything that he had still there in that village. Ken, our son, was teaching there, and they had originally come over for a 2 year to spend 2 years teaching there, and then they were intending to come back to New Zealand and to live in New Zealand. But in the time they were there, they were given a little baby girl, an Indian, well, it's a Spanish Indian baby girl who was only a few days old, and asked if they wished to have her as their own. And so the Ecuadorian laws are such that you just cannot get an adoption through overnight. And what was going to be a 2 year term turned out to be 4 years plus before they actually had everything fixed up and could leave the country with their daughter. And so they asked us if we would come over and see them. And in 1985 we had the privilege of coming over for a month and visiting with them down in Shell, seeing the sights and the sounds and the smells of a Latin American country. Now, I see one brother there grinning a little bit because he was, I understand, was in Mexico, so he knows a little bit about what I'm talking about when you say sights and sounds and smell. And we left to get back to New Zealand and to go back to our normal occupation. We go back to New Zealand, and within 6 weeks or a little longer, God said, I want you back in Ecuador, back in Shell. Didn't tell us what for, but he made it very clear that we had to go back to Ecuador, which in due course we did. Now, the Lord provided everything. We had spent our savings on that first trip, plus a few other extras, because we spent 2 months in the States visiting some areas and having a bit of a tour around, whetting our appetite, unfortunately, to have a further look, and that's what we're doing now. And God provided everything. Within 6 months of getting back to New Zealand, we found ourselves back in the States, in Texas, at a language school down in South Texas, seeking to try and understand a language that tied us up in knots, and still does. Spanish is not for me or for my wife, I'm afraid. I don't know whether it's something to do with age or memory or what it is, but it certainly played tricks with us. However, we went down to Ecuador. While we were in language school in Texas, the Lord revealed to us what he wanted us to do down in Ecuador, in Shell. We had a letter from the administrator of the hospital that is run by HCJB, the Missionary World Missionary Radio Fellowship organization, have a hospital as well as radio work in Ecuador and Quito, and they have a hospital, a jungle hospital down there in Shell in the Amazon Basin. And the administrator wrote to us. We had met him when we'd been visiting our son, and he said, I understand you're coming back to Shell. We have a project down here that we are looking for somebody to come and take on. We have an old hospital building that has been empty since they had built a new one just the year before. And we're looking for somebody to come down and to take that old hospital building and to try and convert it or make it into a guest house. And we're wondering whether you and your good wife would be interested in taking on this project. We felt this was an answer from God, and after corresponding back and forth, a number of letters, and ascertaining exactly what was involved, we felt this is what God would have us to do. So we went down there, and we started working on this old building, trying to make some sort of guest house out of it. We get a lot of folks coming through Shell. In Shell there are several missions operating in that little village. We have the Brethren Mission, the 70 missionaries working there in Shell, working out in the jungles amongst the jungle villages. There's a group of Brethren Assembly workers there, and this is where we thought we would probably be going to work, but God saw to it that he had this other work he wanted us to do. We have the Gospel Missionary Union Fellowship working in another area of the jungle, and their headquarters are also based in Shell, and they have several missionaries working there in that locality. And of course we have HCJB hospital work there, where they have some 35, they have a 35 bed hospital operating there with full facilities for all surgery and other necessary things. Only very major surgery is sent up to Kedah. They can do virtually any type of ordinary surgery. There we have a very, very clever doctor, Christian doctor down there, surgeon, who is able to do a lot of things, and he is used very much in fixing up people who have come in with very serious accidents at the time. And so we went there and we started the work. After 12 months we had this place sufficiently organized that we could start taking in guests. And for the first 12 months my wife was my gopher girl. Go for this, go for that, get this, get that. When I was working on different parts of the project, needing tools or needing other pieces, if I was under the building working on plumbing, she would be able to get me the appropriate spanners and pass them down through the holes and save me having to crawl in there underneath that building, or vice versa if we're working elsewhere. After 12 months we started operating it on a limited scale, and we eventually completed the 17 bedrooms. We can now house up to 34, 36 guests, depending on the makeup of the list of people. Bear in mind that a lot of these rooms are double bedded. Some rooms are single bedded with two beds. You've just got to be very careful how you divide your two of people up. There are tours that come through every year on a regular basis, and we have fed over 40 odd people on these tours at one sitting in our guest room, in our guest dining area. Our average for last year was 8 bed occupancies for the whole of the year, every night of the year. 8 folks on average. So you can see my wife was kept very busy in the kitchen. She did all the cooking. She had maids to help with the cleaning and the other work, but she did the cooking and the hostessing of these folks as they came through. We were able to hand it over at the beginning of this year to another elderly couple who came down for 12 months from the state of Oregon, and they're taking it on in the meantime. And there are another couple, he's a little older than I am, she is a little younger than we are, they are at present coming down as full HCJB members, and they will take over the guest house once they've completed their language studies and have got their support organised, and they will go down. He is a handyman, will be able to carry on and finish off the work that still has to be done. Bear in mind, it's a wooden building and there's constantly things that have to be attended to. As we got further advanced in the building, I was finding more and more time having to go back and fix up something that would malfunction. The Ecuadorian things that are made in Ecuador, some of them are good and some of them leave a little bit to be desired. One of the biggest problems, of course, in our area is that you just can't run down to the hardware shop or the hardware store or the plumbing store or any other store and buy exactly what you want ready made. We have to improvise. So it was very interesting. We spent a very interesting time down there meeting these people and getting this work underway and seeing it progress and prosper. Many folks come down to visit their missionaries that they are supporting. This is another aspect of the work that the guest house is used for. Many, many folks from the States love to come down and see what their workers are doing in this area. And so they come down to stay with their friends or to visit with their workers that they are supporting. We get many missionaries coming down from other parts for a rest and a break for a long weekend or a week. They'll come in and have a time there. So much for the children to be able to see and do in the jungles, because we're right on the edge of the jungles. There's plenty of insect life around, and we have many children coming down with butterfly nets seeking to catch and to trap as many different species as they can find. So the children enjoy it, the parents enjoy the rest and the quiet, and we've got to know many, many people. That's what my wife and I have been doing over these last years there. We're now going back to New Zealand, and we are seeking to travel and to meet up with many of these folks that we have met. Many of them, when we said we hope to travel a little bit in the States, said if you ever come our way, drop us a line, we'd love to have you. So we have done that and taken many of these folks up, and we hope to be able to see something more of your great country, a little bit of Canada, before we get back to New Zealand, hopefully about mid-August. Now, to go back to the assembly work in Ecuador, just to fill you folks in, we have in Shell alone at the beginning of this year, they're not all been there because many of them have gone on furlough like ourselves and have moved out, but at the beginning of this year we had 18 husbands and wives and commended workers in total in Shell from assembly backgrounds, all with assembly accommodation. Now, some of these were working as full-time HCJB members. Some of them are working as assembly workers on loan to various missions like HCJB. We were on loan, as it were, from the assembly folks doing this work, so that we were assembly people, but we had the full privileges of being able to utilize all of the mission resources, which is very handy at times. We had a husband and wife team who were with MAF as pilots with the MAF team. They were assembly folks. And we have six others who are engaged full-time in assembly work in the jungle. Three husbands and three wives. And the wives work just as hard as the husbands oft times in these situations. Seeking to look after children in one case, and doing other work as they can, helping wherever they are needed. The jungles of the Amazon in Ecuador have been divided up into areas according to their provinces, and the assembly have the responsibility for the whole of the Pataza province area. In other words, we're not having GMU working in the Pataza area, sort of overlapping the assembly work. They work in a province south of Pataza, and although we work together, we work separately, as it were, so that we're not having conflict in the villages where we're working, where folks have become bewildered. These people are very ignorant, if I can use the word, ignorant people as far as the world goes, and so if you get different groups coming in and claiming to be Christian and they're teaching different things, it can be very confusing. So they've done this, the evangelical missions in Ecuador have done this to try and keep people from being confused and mixed up as to what is what and what isn't right. So the assembly work is concentrated mainly in Pataza, and they have many, many villages where they have got evangelical groups now organized into little Christian cells, little Christian groupings. They started this by doing schoolwork. One of our assembly workers down there was a man called Lloyd Rogers, He is now in Quito full time, but he was one of the pioneer workers in that area. Some of you may know of him. He comes from the west coast of the States, And Lord has done a tremendous work down there, him and his wife, and they've started a very big work. And he started the work mainly by getting school teachers, Christian school teachers, out into the jungles, and getting the children involved in learning scriptures, as well as the basic schooling that they had to teach. And this has grown, and this has been the means of getting a bridgehead, as it were, established in the jungle schools, in the jungle villages, so that today there are several or many villages that have a Christian witness. The assemblies then, for a number of years, started bringing in the leading men of these villages, the leading Christian men, the men who needed, who were the ones who were the communicators to their fellow men, and they would bring them in and bring them to many schools. And they had everything set up there in Shell, or have everything set up in Shell, where they could bring in groups, and for 5 or 6 days they could teach them basic, very basic scriptural doctrines. Now these people take a lot of teaching, and it's very hard going. This is something they know nothing about, and when you come in there, even the very simplest basic truths are things that are very hard to be grasped at, and they have to go over and over and over and over the same truths for days and days and days, and sometimes weeks on end, before they suddenly grasp what they're getting at, what their meaning is. Once they've got it, they're good, but sometimes it takes a long time for these Indian people to be able to grasp this particular truth or that particular truth. But God is raising up young men and young women too, who now with their higher education, with the Spanish education system, are able to comprehend and to be able to understand. And we have got some very good young men coming on who are able teachers and able translators, so that the assembly missionary now can take out these men with them, and they go out into the villages and they can speak to the people in Spanish. Most of the villages have a smattering of Spanish. They can understand the basic Spanish, but these men can come to them and speak to them in their native language, translate what the missionary is saying into the native language, and that brings much clearer understanding and enlightenment to these people. And so we are seeing the work of God prosper, but Satan is busy too, and he is working also and seeking to hinder. And the communists have been very, very active down in the jungles, more so than anywhere else in Ecuador. The jungles is their breeding or stamping ground, where they seek to influence these ignorant people and try to win them over to their way. We'll give you everything if you accept what we're saying, is their philosophy. But thank God, many of these Christian people are able to see through their what is being proclaimed and what they're saying, and they're able to say, no, we don't want that. And so the communists have had a real battle, so much so that a year or two ago the communists decided that Lloyd Rodger had to go. This man was hindering all their work, and so he became one of their hit men on their hit list. And God in his goodness, we believe, caused a family illness in his family, and his daughter had to go home to the States, and he was, and the family were taken out of the area for a period of time. And during that period of time, the situation changed a little bit, not much, but it did change a little bit. And when Lloyd came back, he never really was able to get back into the work full time like he hoped to. He got called into children's home work back up in Quito that a Canadian brother had been running for many, many years, and who had suffered a heart attack. And so Lloyd got involved with that work, and that work has kept him very much involved up in Quito, so that he has not been back down in the jungles very much. And we believe that God perhaps has been doing this to keep this man. And the work of the assembly work has not been hindered, in a sense. It has been slowed up a little bit, but the other assembly workers down there shall have been able to carry on and consolidate the work that has already been established. And so God is blessing down there. The assembly is also active in other parts of the country. Quito, there is a very big assembly work going on there now at the present time, and there is a very keen interest in assembly work. One of our assembly commended brethren from Canada was talking to me, a man by the name of Dave Callahan, and he was saying that he feels that the assembly work in Ecuador, which has been in, as it were, in the doldrums, not very much progress being made now for a good number of years, just feels, and he said this is a feeling of many of the his fellow workers, that God is about to open the doors and that the assembly work is going to prosper. Now Dave came up from Guayaquil, the city of Guayaquil, some 2 years ago and settled in Quito, and he started going to a little assembly that was virtually almost dead. They were down to something like 15, 20 people, and nobody there to teach and nobody there to lead them. Dave came in there, and we attended that assembly not long ago. They have moved from where they are. They have, what was it during that Sunday morning? They had something like 80-odd people in fellowship on that Sunday morning, and they had about 120, 130 people there at that particular meeting listening to the scriptures, and a very keen interest. The Sunday school work is flourishing. They get many, many children coming to Sunday school, and every week they're seeing people saved and they're being baptized and brought into fellowship. The assembly is growing, and it's, and they feel that the that's just one assembly. There's several other assemblies in Quito, and they're all, from what I can understand, feeling the same sort of thing, that God is about to open the doors, in other words, in blessing, and that the work there is going to grow. Now the Quechua Indian assembly work in the Andes of Ecuador is a very flourishing work too, and the Quechua Indians, the Highland Quechuas, are turning to God, and in good numbers, and they're very, very keen. They're a different, I was going to use a New Zealand term, by the way, they're a different class of people to the jungle Indians. These people are intelligent people, and they have groups of these men come down to Shell to the same type of teaching, and the assembly workers say that these men that they get down from these Highland groups come down there, they take it in, they understand what's being said, they go back and they're able to pass it on. And they go up, the assembly workers go up from time to time to visit these assembly groups, and they're amazed oftentimes when they come back and say the things that they've seen these people, they've taught them down there in Shell, they've gone back and they've seen the things being put into practice, and God is blessing. And the devil is busy too, and he's persecuting the Quechua church today very much so. They are his prime target, because the Quechua Indians are coming to the Lord in many, many, in great numbers. And God and Satan is busy, and he's bringing in much persecution. I'll give you an incident that happened about 2 years ago. In one village, the Catholic curate got saved, a young man, gloriously saved, and he started to testify and to witness, and he grew. He moved out of the church, and he started meeting with the evangelicals, as they call them, and the priest was absolutely irate. Now, I must admit that most of the Catholic priests live quite comfortably alongside the evangelicals, and there's not a lot of problems between them, but you get the odd priest who is very much anti-evangelical Christianity, and this is one of them. And no way was he going to have that young man of his curate, becoming an evangelical. And so he threatened, he did all kinds of things to this young fellow to try and make him recant and come back, and he wouldn't. And so the priest drew up a mob one day, and they caught this young fellow, and they took him, they beat him, they hung him from a tree, didn't hang him, but they hung him from a tree by his hands, and they belted and beated him, and eventually they killed him because he wouldn't recant. Now the priest stood back and stayed out of it. It was a mob that did it to this young man. But as a result of that, many, many people who heard about it and saw it and witnessed it started going to see what to these evangelicals, to see what they had to say and what they were doing, that a young man that they knew so well was prepared to lay down his life for the gospel, was not prepared to recant. And as a result, that brought blessing rather than trouble. Another place, and this happened down in the jungles, the evangelicals had been growing in this village, and they had their little church set up. And one night a group of ruffians came in to the little church, and they took all the Bibles away from the people. They were armed. They took all the Bibles away from the people. They went out, they shut the doors, and they barred the doors so the folks inside couldn't get out in a hurry. And then they went and they put all these Bibles in a heap on the ground, and they poured gasoline over the Bibles, and they tried to light them, set fire to them. And in the meantime, of course, the people inside were trying to get out. They sort of banging on the doors and windows, and this caused a commotion. The people in the village started rushing out to see what was going on, and in the meantime, these villains, they were trying to light the Bibles. They had three attempts at lighting these Bibles, and the matches wouldn't ignite the gasoline. And eventually the crowd gathered, and these ruffians ran off into the jungles and disappeared. But what rejoicing for these simple Christian folks. They came out, here's their Spanish Bibles, unharmed apart from the gasoline, which soon evaporated, and their Bibles were kept, and they were rejoicing that God was able to keep their Bibles, keep his word, from being destroyed by the enemy. And I could recount other things too, but we won't for the sake of time. Time is moving on, in fact it has gone. But God is working in that land. But the biggest need of that land today, as far as the assembly work is concerned, is for more workers who can go down there and teach. We don't want evangelists. They're doing the evangelizing. We want, or they want, men of God who can go down there and bring the word of God down in Spanish to make it understandable for these simple people, that they might grasp these things, these truths, and by grasping them, they may be able to pass the message on in their own language to their own people. I had the privilege one day of taking a fellow New Zealand friend, Christian assembly man, who came to visit us. Briefly, I had the privilege of taking him out by plane to a jungle village where two of our assembly workers had been having a conference, and this man wanted to see some of the assembly work firsthand, so we flew him away out into this little village on the last day of the conference, and then he was able to listen to these men and see the group that had gathered. There were some 30, 40 odd people gathered, and then in the afternoon they had a baptism in the river right close by, and the village folks said to the missionaries, "Will you do the baptizing?" And they said, "No, we don't think we can do the baptizing. You know how to baptize, you know what all about baptism, you do the baptizing." So we were able to stand there and watch these people from the church take these three people and baptize them in the simple ceremony that we observed. And this brother was absolutely enthralled seeing the locals doing their own work in the proper way.